to the Food Engineering Podcast. I'm Samantha Russo, Managing Editor of Food Engineering Magazine. In this episode, we will be discussing food scarcity and the need to increase the shelf life of products both before and after consumer purchase. Specifically, how packaging is addressing this issue. I am joined by Todd Moisling, Senior Manager, Market Development at Freshlock. Todd, thank you so much for being here. Would you like to introduce yourself? And because you definitely know yourself better than I do.
Well, thank you, Sam. And I appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you today. My name is Todd Moisling, and I'm in market development with the Freshlock team as part of the Reynolds Consumer Products business. I've been a packaging guy for about 32 years. Half of it is on the film side, working with a variety of customers and markets. And then the last 14 was Freshlock, working with closures on flexible films and flexible packaging. I started on the sales side, moved more toward specific markets, developing markets, and now I really enjoy a lot of the focus that I put on sustainability as well as child safety. I'm married, live in Chicagoland, have four kids that have grown and making their way out into the world, and two grandchildren, and a dog named Belle, who's very ambitious. I like hiking and gardening and music and books and all that, and that's me.
Oh my gosh, that's lovely. You sound like, first off, I want to say the experience you have in this field is great. And that's something I want to get into before we get into everything else. But I also want to comment that the family you have just sounds beautiful, and also living in Chicagoland. Very fun, very jealous. So with your experience in this industry, both packaging and with closures, how have you seen it change within the last 5 to 10 years?
Well, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
That the word sustainability has been amplified dramatically into every office and every periodical that people that are in this industry pick up or listen to. When I started out, you know, we always knew that a material that was recyclable was a good thing, but there was really no avenue in order to measure it. You weren't being tasked. It was a requirement as part of who you should be as a supplier. And the consumer demand, they liked it, but they didn't demand it like they do now. And then several years ago, in the last 5 or 10 years, we just saw that everything amplified. And now I would say that if you're not involved in sustainability in some way in packaging, then you've been on vacation because this is our primary focus right now.
And this is the way a lot of food manufacturers have decided to invest in sustainability, right? Packaging seems to be like the number one method of doing so. I mean, there is the carbon emission reduction that's usually happening, but usually making things recyclable in terms of the health of the planet is a really big one. But food scarcity is one that we don't really talk about too much in terms of sustainability and why it's important to have such things as closures on food packaging bags of different industries. And we all know that food waste is a large problem in the United States. What are some of the reasons you believe this problem exists, and what factors play into it?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I think one analogy, just to bring some focus on it, is a story about a pickle. The other day, having dinner, and one of my daughters was over, and she had a pickle on her plate, and took a bite out of it, and she was whole with the rest of the meal, and says, "No, I'm finished. I'm fine." And I knew this was coming up, and so I kind of thought about that, but. When you do the backstory on that pickle, you have to start with the farmer and the farmland, amending the soil, cultivating the soil, fertilization, the planting of the seeds, everything that goes into growing it. Then the harvest, the labor required for that, machinery and energy that goes involved with that. And then we take these cucumbers at that point and we send them off to the processor. Now the processor has costs. They have energy. They're sorting these cucumbers and cleaning them and cutting them. And then they're creating the brines that are needed in order to make what will be a pickle. Then you get into the canning and packaging part of it there. Surround all this by food safety requirements and labor needs. And then they get their product out and it goes into distribution. So now I've got further transportation costs and I'm sending that off to the market, wherever that might be or whatever form that might look like. And now I'm taking that jar of pickles and I'm stocking it and I'm promoting it as a brand and I'm trying to make it available and attractive to the consumer. So a consumer comes along, namely in this case, myself or my wife, and we say, hey, we could use some pickles. And so we buy the jar and bring it home. And then once we open the jar, now it goes in the refrigerator. And so we're doing things, taking steps in order to try to preserve it to a certain point. And then it finally comes down to a meal. Now in e-commerce, we could call this the final moment of truth. Well, so it's put on the plate. And then it all comes down to one bite's taken to it. And then after going through all that, it ends up in the waste. Now, I'm not suggesting that it's anybody's fault. It's just it's part of our society and our culture and the way that we receive foods and the way that we address our food securities. I feel like there's a lot of factors behind this, but when you take a look at it from a number standpoint, the USDA said that retail and consumer food waste is about 30 to 40%. It's valued about $161 million worth of food and 160 trillion calories. And there's a lot of factors that go into this. One of them, which was a term that I've recently come across, and it's called food insecurity. And this is part of the consumer mentality. And when you think about it, we want food on hand. It's one of our basic needs to be able to know that when we're hungry, we'll have the ability to get that nutrition and satiate ourselves. And so we want it when we want it. We want it to be fresh. We want to make sure that we provide those foods to our family, and we want those things to be fresh. Think about the pandemic for a moment. You know, when all of a sudden things were shutting down, we can all remember stories of a mad rush to the grocery store when people were getting food, whether they needed it or not, they might need it. And so they had to have that security. And then it's a very, very important until we're satiated. You know, once we have the food and our need at that moment is fulfilled, we tend to push the plate away. And it's no longer that important, at least for the time being. We also see factors in labeling, for example, with the code dates. And there's a lot of people, including my wife, who the code dates are a religion. If it's past the Best Buy date, then it has to be bad. And I'm more of an old school type person. I look at it, it's like you got to smell it and taste it. But we've all heard the adage, when in doubt, throw it out, right? And then it comes down to the packaging factors. And that's some of the things on what we do to preserve food. And some packaging is working well and some need a little help. But these are all factors that go into what will apply to food waste as well as to food preservation.
I'm really glad that you've went so in depth with this and talked about the word, you know, or the phrase food insecurity. It is huge and it is something that I can see how, you know, I live sort of in the Flint area, right? So food deserts are very common. And if you don't know what a food desert is, it's an area in a city that doesn't have direct access to a grocery store, or people in that area, you know, can't, you know, they don't have public transit or vehicles to be able to go to a grocery store. So it becomes really important to be able to find and have canned things, things that are preserved for long periods of time, things that you can close up and put back in the fridge and, or buy in bulk and do that still. So, you know, you're right that a lot of it comes down to what the consumer is kind of doing. You know, companies can do a lot of things packaging wise, right? But a lot of them don't. And what do you think the benefits are for companies to focus on food scarcity and the packaging that they give to consumers that can enable them to have, you know, food preservation, to be able to, as you say, be satiated for longer periods of time?
Yeah, so a lot of companies, obviously, they're in business for a reason. They want to provide a service or a product. They want to help people, but they're also there in order to grow financially and be productive financially. So if we take a look at it, let's just say the financial benefit. And then let's look at one of their markets or their demographics that is accelerating, and the Gen Zer. So the Gen Zer is 90 million strong, right? They now represent about 30% of the U.S. workforce, and they have a purchasing power of over $143 billion. They're not happy about the state of the world when it comes to sustainability. And they see waste and they see carbon footprints as something that needs to change versus what was acceptable in previous generations. The Gen Zer looks behind the curtain and they're not afraid to ask, you know, a company, why should I stay with you? What are you doing? I know my mom uses you. I know my dad uses you and things like that, but prove to me why you earn my support. And they have the power right there at the point of purchase to send both a negative or a positive message about their perception into the world. And 70% of brands and retailers, they're expected to be more sustainable. And that means reducing waste. 70% of these Gen Zers are major influencers in family decisions. They give their opinion on cars and consumables and the food and beverages that they believe, we should invest our dollars in. And so they will support brands to reduce waste and also brands who educate the consumer to take sustainable actions. So I think just as Gen Zers alone has a lot of strong reasons.
Yeah. Social media as well, and media in general, right? It's a lot of free resources out there to see what your favorite companies are up to and what their practices are. So what ways are you seeing brands like starting to tackle this specific issue?
It's a calico quilt. It's potpourri right now. Let's take a look at snack packaging. One of the questions we have in our business, because we do reclosables, so we're putting a press to close zipper or a slider type reclosable solution on a pouch. And a lot of people come up to us over the years and say, hey, how come we don't see more of these things on chip bags and snack bags? You know, it's like we're always having to roll them over. You open them up and they tear. And, it's like, why aren't they doing more about that? And when you think about it, we even buy aftermarket purchases like chip clips and things in order to create that reposability that is not built into the packaging. But recently I can name some examples that I'm starting to see emerge on the shelf. And one tip of the hat is to Dots pretzels. If you haven't had a Dots pretzel yet, in this and stuff, they're very good. And a lot of different flavors and things. But not only did they have a good product, but they also had more of a premium type package, and it was reclosable. And by adding those closures, once the package is compromised, that closure helps to contain the product. It helps to maintain the freshness as long as it possibly can, or slow down the ability of that product to degrade if it were just open to the air and the environment. Another one is there's a small company I came across in the frozen food section. It was Holy Veggie, is a company out of Canada. And what I liked about what they were doing is they were actually using the term ugly produce. So think about seconds, cauliflower that might be slightly brown and things. And they're processing those and then putting them into, like, rolling them into like a panko bread crust, and then selling them and packaging them as an appetizer, and they're delicious. But they're products that people want. But what would have happened to that in this case, a head of cauliflower, if you didn't have a company like this picking it up and finding a method to use it? I'm a big advocate of right size packaging. So on the one end, you have products that are overpackaged, and in any market, you can see there's products that you're saying, my gosh, does it really need all that? This is a packager telling you this, right? On the other end, you're seeing products that are underutilized. So in personal care, whether it be like personal electronics, perfumes, cosmetics, you go there and you see that the packaging is part of the brand, right? You know, it is, and there might be three or four different layers of packaging you have to go through in order to get to the product. On the other hand, you know, during the trend movement toward more sustainable packaging, there are a lot of groups that would say, why do we need packaging at all on produce? But think about that for a moment. If I had a bunch of apples, and I just put them out into a giant bin, which many grocers do and farmer markets do, and they have great success with it. But it's going to go back to that consumer nature. Is you're in shopping, you're going to select those that are the most ideal, right? You're going to bring your family home. You want them to have the freshest, most crisp vegetables. So you're actually going to accelerate, in my opinion, more waste by reducing that packaging. When you go to the produce store or the produce part of the market next time, take a look at products like grapes, for example, or stone fruits, where you see them in these bags that are open. And the reason they're open is that they're being protected to get through distribution, but they're open because somebody is checking them to make sure that if there are bad grapes, they're removing those to put them in good grapes in its place. And that helps the whole product to be more salable and more attractive to consumers. So I feel like there are a lot of things behind the scenes that brands are doing that consumers are not aware of, and that's okay. We don't need the consumer to know everything that we're doing to try to get the right product. But then I think we're seeing brands do some things that consumers have been asking for in order to help reduce waste, like the Dots pretzel.
Absolutely. You know, I really didn't think about the fact that, you know, because I'm definitely someone who prefers to handpick my own vegetables and fruits. And now I feel sort of responsible, you know, like I have to save these vegetables and fruits that maybe someone else won't want to get. You mentioned earlier how your wife looks at the Best Buy date as like religiously, you know, like this is law. I have to throw this away. I'm also someone who, like you, smells it, tastes it. I'm like, how long has this really been bad, right? But the shelf life is actually a huge factor And how does this play into food scarcity as well? And within packaging, how can packaging extend shelf life more than it already has?
Well, great question. So different foods deteriorate differently. That's why we have, sections of the store that are ambient temperature and open. And then we have sections of the store that are refrigerated and then those that are frozen. Some products can live in a box or in a can on a shelf, no matter whether it's warm or cold. And others, you have to buy it now. And you're thinking about fresh meats, for example, because of their perishability. So thinking about that, they deteriorate differently. Look at a market or an industry like packaged meats or packaged cheese. So a lot of consumers aren't aware of is that that there's a lot of engineering that goes into that packaging of those products. And there is a lot of focus being placed on the priority and the importance of the packaging in the process. These industries are doing a lot, as much as they can, to extend the shelf life before the package is open. Even products like you see the tossed salads that are already pre-cleaned in a bag, they're ready. All you got to do is dump them in the bowl and put dressing on them, right? A lot of people don't know is that those are generally packaged with the oxygen being removed, and they're what we call gas flushed, so that they're at the optimal protection for the longest shelf life possible. Now, what happens is many times we get some of these packages home and then we open them because, hey, I just want a little salad right now. But then they can't understand why the product starts to deteriorate pretty quickly after that. Right? And it's because they've compromised that atmosphere. So I think one of the things that brands can do is to educate consumers in that way is, there's really no need. Many times, like in the case of meats, keep the meat in that package until you intend to use it, because it could very well be that it's engineered for freshness. And as soon as you compromise it or even move it into something different, you might start to compromise that freshness. I feel like that's where the shelf life discussion comes into place. And I feel like we could actually make consumers a bigger part of that understanding.
So would you say that either putting instructions on, putting it away after you've used some of the product, do you think that is something that could be helpful? Or could you go into more detail, I guess, about what you would see or what you think we could see from companies in terms of informing its consumers?
So I think let's look at a package of hot dogs. You bring the hot dogs home, you have them in the refrigerator, and we could easily say that this package, these hot dogs are protected with some type of flavor protection material. And so please keep in container until ready for use. That I think it's just a simple message like that. It just alerts them as there's something about this package that they're saying that I don't know. I might want to know more about it. I may not care more about it. All I know is the basic message is that this vessel is designed for this. And I feel like, to me anyway, if I picked up two packages of hot dogs and one said something like that and the other one didn't, I would perceive more value in the one that was trying to educate me or something. Mm. And that might be worth a little bit more to me. So I feel like those are some things that brands can do that maybe have just been overlooked in the past.
Yeah, I'm a vegetarian and I don't eat dairy, gluten-free. So all of my food is packaged and says, consume within so-and-so days of opening, right? But I have my own methods of preserving them long enough, I think, to be able to get use out of them. Because for someone who is, who buys a pack of hot dogs, right, but they're a singular human, cooking for themselves, it would be really difficult to eat all of those hot dogs or cook all of those hot dogs at once and kind of know what would be the best way to save them? Would it be to cook them, or would it be to put them back in the packaging? And yeah, that would be something I would be interested to know in the food that I also purchase. And
well, you know, there's an old running joke. It's like, you know, somebody at the hot dog place must have known somebody at the bakery place, because why are the hot dog buns 1 pound? And then the hot dogs are another pound. So there's always going to be something uneven there. And when you play that out a little bit in your mind, as it applies to food waste, it's like, okay, well, that means that somewhere down the road, I may have 2 extra buns that I don't have hot dogs for. So what's going to happen with those? I've already had a bunch of hot dogs. I'm not going to have any more hot dogs, but now these buns sit. And then does that become a target for food waste? And I guess we're getting a little bit detailed here on one specific application, but you kind of get the point.
Yeah,
the products, being a vegetarian, there's a lot of shelf stable products that the packaging part of it is not as critical. But if you're buying in bulk, like a lot of people did, especially around the pandemic, you know, I know that flour was one thing that a lot of people had their eye on. They were buying larger amounts of flour and they wanted to protect it. Any other types of products you might have, beans, that type of thing, generally the drier they are, the longer they'll last naturally. But a lot of people don't know that. They think, oh, these beans, I've had these beans on the shelf for 6 months, they've got to be bad now. That may not be the case.
So when products are in home with the consumer, what are some things that brands can do to still be helping to reduce spoilage of foods?
Yeah, so I would say, and I like to use examples of this, but let's think about coffee. Right now, you've got a lot of consumers that are looking at the outside of that package, and they have ethical concerns about what this coffee, how this coffee got to them. Was the grower environmentally conscious? Would it be considered a sustainable coffee? But then the package that these coffee beans comes in many times is a multi-material package. And so the irony is that they're paying a lot for a package, but nothing can happen with the package after they're using it is done. So they have, let's say some of these bags, they have tin ties on them. They have one-way valves, which are necessary in order for the coffee to, expel gas. One of the things we could do is we could look at a package like that to say, how can we protect it for the consumer without adding all these multi-material elements to it? And that's where I'm enhancing not only my waste discussion, but also my sustainability in the package discussion.
Yeah, it is very attractive to consumers to not have so much packaging. But like you said, sometimes it really is just necessary in order to tackle the, food preservation after it gets home.
Yeah, and that's where like closures, for example, are an option. Again, I'm biased, but they do make sense. If I can help to maintain the integrity of that package, maintain the product in there as close to how it was when the consumer received it, but then give them a vessel that they can use over and over again through the reclosability, that makes sense. One of the things we're seeing is in sustainability, there's a big drive toward taking a look at compostable options. And in both produce and also in products like coffee, there's a lot of interest. A lot of brands are taking a look at products that they can use for their product and consumer, different packages that might offer a compostable end of life. And I think we're probably going to see more of that as time goes on.
That is really exciting. I saw compostable K-cup coffee pod things, and I was like, wow, they're really going all out with it. And side note, that's something I wish I could do so badly, right? But as an apartment dweller, there's no way. I have nowhere to put it.
Well, you know, stay tuned on that.
We are
seeing more interest in some type of a grassroots or a community type compostable effort where, you know, you might be able to make trips to a certain area and you can put your products in there. So you may not have the backyard, but you're not too far away from a able to contribute to the compostable material.
Absolutely. What an amazing idea. So as a member of the packaging community, how is FreshLock specifically innovating to address this issue and add convenience for the consumer?
Several years ago, Intel did a survey, and it was very interesting in the feedback. They said that in the consumer's mind, next to freshness, reposability is the most important feature for a package. And they see this because they know what it's supposed to do. They understand when it's functioning for that particular product, that it does help them with their product satisfaction. So, you know, again, I'm biased here, but we do need to make it as easy as possible to add reposability on a package that we intend for the consumer to put their hand in multiple times. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's an item that can degrade and has a shelf life that needs to be considered. We're putting a lot of focus with the products right now into helping the brands get that package available. I'm proud of the efforts that we've made, especially with many of our customers. You've come to us and they have a sustainable goal set in place, and they're going through evaluating all of their packaging channels, and they're saying, what can we do to improve this? And there's a cost there. There's a lot of energy that has to be put into getting something and changing a package, a lot of considerations that they have to make. And so we embrace that type of dialogue. That's where, for us, collaboration shines. We want to hear from the brand. We want to hear from the packager. We want to hear from all aspects, those that make the machinery that run the packaging, the material people on the film side who are engineering the film. And we want to make sure that we're looking at solutions that can help them succeed. Because if we succeed, then we know that the next step is to get the consumer to embrace it and to see what we're doing. And then that's where we build in circularity. So I'll give you an example of, I'll give you two examples of a couple things that that we're proud of that we're seeing to start to grow. Is right now in the grocery store, I don't know, you're a vegetarian, but a lot of people are going after these roasted chickens.
Okay. Mm, yeah, no, I remember that.
And I think a lot of it is because they worked all day, that nobody, they haven't really prepared anything. It's like, what are we going to eat tonight? And say, hey, let's get one of those chickens. So right now, they're generally found in a rigid tub. It's a rigid tray with a dome top on it that snaps. And people will bring that home and use that. And sometimes it's all gone right away. Sometimes it could last a person several days. They put it in the refrigerator. Well, we are now working with one of our customers in what is the chicken roaster bag, a chicken roaster bag. And this is actually a slider bag. So it's a flexible package. It's heat resistant, so it can stay under those heat lights for a long period of time. It uses one of our new Elevate platforms, which is an applicator equipment that we use to help make the bag and then put the slider function on it. And the results is that it has about an 80% reduction in materials while it's still protecting and preserving and maintaining the integrity of the product. So there's a lot of advanced technology behind it. We see more of that type of thing take place. The consumer feedback is good because now there's a slider and they know when the slider moves one way, it opens the bag, and then it moves the other way, it closes the bag compared to a dome top where you're not quite sure if you got it snapped or not, right? You know, it's those types of things. So that's one. Another one is in the laundry aisle, and we work with a company that supplies Costco. And if you go into a Costco store, you'll see that they have moved their laundry detergent tub to a this is like a liquid laundry pack, one of the soluble, water soluble packs, to a bag, and it's the same thing. They've got tremendous savings, carbon reduction, and also material savings. That's not food waste, but it's just another example of what we're
doing. Yeah, that's really interesting. Because I've seen it too with dog food, you know, pet food stores. If you want that resealable zipper, whether it be just something that you close yourself and put pressure on, or if there is an actual closure that you use, it definitely increases the price, but it also increases, you know, consumer desire to get it, because you know that your dog food is going to be good. You know, if you have one dog and you want to buy in bulk because it's cheaper, you won't have to worry about spoiled food. And dog food usually has a long shelf life. It's a bit to begin with, but depending on the type of dog food, it's still important to be careful about it. And that's something that I've always thought of, like, this feels like thicker material. This maybe is more material than a normal bag without that closure. So it's really interesting to hear that there's such a huge reduction in materials. And I'm interested in hearing, I don't know if you can share, but some of the technology and what it looks like to be able to achieve that.
I don't think the technology is it's available to many packagers. I think really it's about how you use the technology, and it's how you incorporate it. And I feel like this is where we start to, you know, go back to the term collaboration, which we're very big on. And the collaboration aspects of it is we've got to understand the needs of the product. For example, let's use your dog food or dog treat. Is it a high moisture product? Is it a low moisture product? You know, is it, would you consider this a premium thing, or is it something that is a value added product? Are you selling it in bulk, or are you selling it with just a small pouch that might have a smaller number of servings? And then we have to understand from the brand of where their borders are, you know, what they can do and what they don't want to do. Many times the brands really want to make sure that their consumer has a great experience with that package. Some of the brands come to us and they say, hey, we're kind of moving away from just brick and mortar type stores in our distribution. We want it to be available for e-commerce. Some of them say is that, you know, because of the moisture content on this thing, once it's open, it dries out pretty quickly. And by knowing that, then we know what levers or technologies that we can incorporate in order to bring that package to life. We'd like to say that every package should have, you know, the most premium closure on it. It should be the highest barrier possible. We know that that's not realistic for everybody. But again, going back to my earlier comment, it's about right-sizing the packaging. And right-sizing means that I'm considering everything. I want that package to have optimal freshness for the consumer as long as it can. And I want it to be able to do it in a way that is feasible and in a way that the brand can convey that message, so that when that Gen Zer comes up and they see all the things we've done in order to get that, they'll come back and buy it again.
So this is just a weird coincidence, but growing up, my dad, he has been a packaging engineer for basically my entire life. So I grew up with a father who would go to Walmart or go to a grocery store. Okay. And he would spend 20 minutes just staring at some package display, or, you know, looking at the product's packaging. And God, how annoying for a child. But now looking back and getting into this industry and hearing what your thoughts are on packaging, which, I mean, thinking about the future of packaging, someone like you is going to have a much different idea of what is possible and then what is kind of being predicted as a consumer trend that you can see. Mm-hmm. And thinking of someone like my dad or me, I'm thinking about it too in terms of, yeah, I mean, what's the right size? How can we be more efficient in actually creating packaging that's going to specifically fit this brand's product? Or how can the packaging enhance this product? And I think food scarcity is just one of the ways that a brand can really elevate itself in terms of packaging and in terms of selling itself to consumers, because it's the main thing we look at, right? So what are your thoughts on the future of packaging? Do you have anything else that you want to share?
Thinking about it. By the way, I got to take a step back, because anybody that's listening to this that has a spouse that you've gone grocery shopping with, that they're saying, I never want to take them grocery shopping because I can leave them in the market and I find them and they're inspecting some package and trying to, you know, and they're saying, wow, look what they did here. They did this and this and that and that. And I know they can relate. Yep, that's what we do. We're packagers. So, but to your question, I think collaboration is huge. I love that word for what it does. It'll probably be overused in a couple of years, but it's what it means, and that is that we have to work together. I feel like that is in order to be able to go through the steps I had mentioned to define the right size package for that product, the right fit for use for that package, for that product. And then I feel like labeling is one of the things. There's a lot of interpretations of what labeling means. And I believe, I've heard different sources, but a lot of times it's a reference code. You know, they want, you know, the brand wants optimal freshness. Sometimes it has to do with, you know, as it pertains to production lots and distribution lots. So there's reasons for it. But we need to educate the consumer that just because it's past its best buy date doesn't mean that it just automatically won a free ticket to the trash bin. There are more things. There was a study done because the Pentagon was finding that they were throwing out so many pharmaceuticals. And it was a study done between Harvard Medical and Department of Defense. And they actually found that in the case of many pharmaceuticals, the shelf life was extremely... Some of these pharmaceuticals could go 15 years without losing any efficacy. And we would say we would have a best buy date or a expiration date on them. And so I feel like that whole labeling and the date codes that we put out there needs to be somehow formalized in a way that makes sense in terms of food risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about beer. I mean, when I was younger, this whole, you know, there was a best buy or a born on dating or a freshness thing for beer. And I mean, if it was a bad beer, you'd just say, this beer doesn't taste as good, you know, and you get rid of it. But now they try to do it to everything because I think they want that freshness to be at its peak.
Yeah.
Those, I think, are the two big things we can label, we can educate the customer, that's part of the labeling, and then collaboration together on working the right size of the package.
You know, I will say it is so exciting to be someone my age watching the sustainability movement kind of just bulldoze over the food industry and just, like you said, Gen Z, making these demands and companies and brands listening. I think that in itself is a huge collaboration that has made great strides and has laid this great foundation for sustainability and food scarcity to be even like oh my God, I just had a brain fart. I'm so sorry. I'm trying to say, I a great foundation for more innovation in the future. That is what I'm trying to say. So, I mean, it's just been so exciting talking to you. And I definitely hear a lot of that food engineering speak. And it's very nostalgic and refreshing to hear that. And it's been a fantastic podcast. And I know that Effie would love to speak to you again about this.
Well, thank you for having me. As you can tell, you know, when it comes to packaging, we can go all day. I appreciate the attention to the topic. I think it's an important one. And there's anything that we can do to help in the future, just let us know.
Will do. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this food engineering podcast. Again, we have Todd Moisling, Senior Manager, Marketing Development at Freshlock. And we've been just having a fantastic discussion about packaging, food scarcity, and the future of what sustainability will mean after a product reaches a consumer's home. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.